Okay, you're back with us for another GoldSeek.com radio episode. Today's special guest, Gerald Celente from the Trends Research Institute. As the U.S. government shutdown enters its second week here, and less than 10 days left to the debt ceiling, the U.S. could default on legal obligations, making the fall of even Lehman Brothers seem trivial. Joining me to discuss the implications of a sovereign debt default, Gerald Celente, the director of the Trends Research Institute. His team produces the Trends Journal. Welcome back.
Oh, thanks for having me, Chris.
Let's delve into the minutiae of this U.S. debt limit, you know, including the total amount of money the U.S. government can borrow to meet its obligations, such as Social Security, Medicare, military salaries, interest on the national debt. Do you think that this is as big of a deal as some sources indicate?
Yeah, it is. It's a big deal. Not that they won't do it. Of course, they're going to have to do it at some point. But it's a big deal in the sense that, you know, this is another day and just another episode in the world of the incompetence and the inepts. And, you know, we've been going on with this thing for how long when you really think about it? We remember the fiscal cliff we were all going to fall off? And that went on for 2 years. And as it ended up, they downgraded, S&P did, they downgraded U.S. Credit worthiness back in August of 2011. You know, so this thing just keeps going on and on and on and on and on. And then we had sequestering, and now we have the shutdown, and now we have the debt ceiling. So what it's doing, it's causing destabilization in a marketplace that's already destabilized. There is no economy. Oh, I forgot tapering. How could I have forgotten tapering? You remember what that did to the markets. So, yes, it's important in the context of the whole.
You make an important point as well that they're certainly going to save us from a debt default. But, you know, many folks claim that we would never see a government shutdown. And here we are, you know, almost 20% of the government, not a huge number, but still 15 to 20% of the government is technically shut down. Maybe they will enter debt default, and that would cause mayhem throughout the global financial system, including the stock and bond markets. Of course, we'd see interest rates soar, and then mortgage expenses would soar. That would crush the nascent housing recovery, putting downward pressure on our economic recovery.
You know, you're looking at a real unraveling of the entire global economic system, because when you look at countries such as China, I mean, what are they? They're holding on to about $1.3 trillion worth of U.S. debt, and Japan and all the others that are so heavily weighed by withholding U.S. debt. You know what this may also end up doing, by the way? It might also end up in a devaluation, official devaluation of the U.S. dollar. I mean, that's if it went to the extreme.
They have no other alternative. We're looking at a mountain of debt. Roughly $2 trillion between Japan and China are two largest holders of T-bonds and notes. $2 trillion would have to be somehow absorbed by the market. The market will not absorb it. It could not stand such a huge sea change. That forces the U.S. Treasury or the Fed or a combination thereof to absorb that $2 trillion. So it would essentially be the U.S. government forgiving its own debts. There's only one way for that to happen and the markets to remain solvent, a U.S. downgrade of the U.S. dollar, the greenback. Do you think we could see a 20-30% or more devaluation?
Well, the United States has done it before. Go back to 1933. The dollar was pegged to gold. And gold, it was pegged, what, at $20.62 an ounce. And then what happened? FDR called in all the gold. If you didn't bring it in, you went to jail. It got fined. And what happened? They sold it back to the government to $20.62 an ounce. And as soon as they got it all in, they repegged the dollar to gold to $35 an ounce. That means they devalued the dollar. You just lost some 70% of your purchasing power. And that's the kind of way that they will do it. They won't do it straight out. In this case, they may. And you know, there's anything can happen. As you just saw what happened, that's you know, made the news and everybody, you know, it's kind of gone over their head. The United States invaded two sovereign countries this past weekend, Libya and Somalia, to find the bad guys. I mean, what if Somalia or Libya, you know, they were heavily armed countries and with substantial militaries, and they came into the United States and for looking for a person that they thought, you know, did something with no proof, but they're suspects and they want to question them. I mean, would America Stanford for one moment? No. And so what I'm saying is, the way things are going, we can have a traumatic geopolitical event occur that's going to get the people's minds off a lot of things, other than more so than a debt ceiling or a shutdown, because they could then blame this on somebody else, and then they could use that as a reason why we can't raise the debt ceiling in this time of crises. So in other words, whatever they do, I don't think they're going to do it so blatantly. There'll be a covering around it of some sort to make it seem like it was a last resort measure.
The threat of debt default is jeopardizing the vestiges of our U.S. AAA debt status. And you did mention the S&P downgraded U.S. debt from AAA to AA. Fitch and Moody's, at last check, I believe, are still holding out with that AAA debt status. If we lose the stability, if that implodes, I think it could threaten, you know, at least that $0.25 trillion worth of interest rate sensitive financial derivatives outstanding. And, you know, our top banks own about half of that. That comes to about $0.25 trillion worth of risk that you might say, well, it's just the banks. But really, we found out recently we're all on the hook for the banks. So is it really just the banks, or is it really we the people who owe this $0.25 trillion sitting on our major banks' balance sheets? And as I said, as that interest rates start to ratchet up, those securities, many of them, begin to implode. Any thoughts?
Yes, of course we the people. We pay for everything. Who bailed out the banks? You know, who bailed out those financial companies and auto companies? It's we the people. We get the tab on everything, and not only in the U.S., everywhere. Look what they've done in Greece and Spain and Ireland and Portugal and Italy. Look at the austerity measures in the U.K. They raised the taxes on the people across the board. Look at the facts. Our median household income is below 1999 levels. And what do? Every city, state, everybody raises their taxes. Look what Obama did after promising not to raise taxes. What did he do? He raised taxes after the election. Look what it's done to retail, the payroll taxes, the little people. Look what's going on now with Obamacare. It raises a tax. I'm not calling it a tax. The Supreme Court called it a tax. So what's going to happen? Do the math. Everybody's being forced to buy insurance. And by the way, who are we buying? This is not socialized medicine. We're buying it from private companies. That's the merger of state and corporate powers. That's called fascism. So now tell me, what's going to happen to the money that people are being forced to buy insurance or being fined if they don't? What's that going to do to retail sales? So everything is going down. The debt level's going up. The crisis is forming. Who are they going to go after to pay for it? Who are they go after all the time? Us.
John Q. Public. Some folks are likening the Detroit bankruptcy as the, you might say, proverbial canary in the coal mine. You know, I think the typical American, if they've even thought about it, probably views it as an isolated event, sequestered, if you will, from the rest of the country. But we're starting to see this theme emerge. I mean, we're seeing Memphis up against the rope, Birmingham, Atlanta, of course, Detroit. And many other major cities, you know, a generation ago or 10, 20 years ago, this would be an unimaginable thought. Could the United States find itself in a Detroit-like situation? In fact, are we there now? Because on a per capita basis, we actually owe twice what the citizens of Detroit owed at their default. Any thoughts?
Yes, in the sense that I believe that many people know what's going on, because all you have to do is look around your own city or wherever you travel, and you could see the decline happening everywhere. I don't think people are oblivious to this. I think, yes, they think Detroit was a one-off in some sense, But in the other sense, hey, look over here in New York. I mean, what, the Metro North, you know, the rail line between New York and Connecticut, Stamford, Connecticut, you know, the traffic, that's one of the richest places around in business-wise, between Connecticut and New York City. I mean, the thing breaks down for a week. Anybody riding on a rail in the United States, you know, it's like a day in Calcutta. You know, go to Kennedy Airport after flying back, you know, from Norway or any of the Asian countries. You know, you think you flew back into the third world. Drive down the parkway. Look at all the garbage on the strewing the streets. So I think people see the breakdown. I think they're aware of the breakdown, and I also believe people won't be surprised if it breaks down. And I think that's why a lot of people are preparing. You know, there are still a lot of, you know, even though, you know, gold prices have softened somewhat, you know, as I've made very clear, and you know, unlike some of the other people, I'm not selling any gold in terms of, I mean, we're not a gold business. We're not a silver business. You have the Trends Journal. How many advertisements are in it? None. Not one. So we're not selling anybody's product. All we sell is information. And our information to sell has to be accurate. So I believe that's why you still have the preppers. That's why people are still into survivalism. And it's not declining. It's growing. And when you look around the world, by the way, look what's going on in Thailand. The people are buying gold like there's no tomorrow. Look what's going on in India. They're trying to do everything they possibly can, the Indian government, to stop the money from flowing out of the country and from stopping people to buy gold. Why? Because people know that their paper currencies are worthless because of what their governments are doing. Look at the Asian meeting this past week. Listen to all of them from Indonesia to China. They're all concerned about the economy. Look at the World Bank. They just downgraded Asian growth. So, yes, this whole thing is collapsing. But again, as a trend forecaster with the Globalnomic methodology, we look beyond the financial situation. And we're looking at geopolitics very heavily because we think that's going to be the wild card in the game. And I say that with a lot of confidence because you don't have to believe me on this one. Remember the Great Depression? Pearl Harbor made people forget about that one really quick.
We've seen this scenario unfold time and time again where difficult economic conditions, particularly global in scale, just seem to lead to world war. And historians have pointed out that this is not a coincidence. False flag situations, as you've just outlined, going back even way before World War II, fomenting the Spanish-American War. We mentioned that less than 20% of the government is currently shut down. But if more cuts do arise, given the U.S. government is the largest employer of American citizens, could we see an unemployment explosion, and what would that mean?
Well, yeah, the unemployment numbers probably will start going up again. And again, this thing is already having a major effect. I mean, import, exports, I mean, you can't get anything coming into the country anymore because of the slowdown. And when I say anything, I mean a lot of, they're not anything, but it was difficult enough before, the inadequacies of the system, and now it's becoming even worse. No, this has wide implications. And what people, I believe, should start to consider and start admitting, they got a bunch of sociopaths who they call their senators, congressmen, commanders in chief. Be it Clinton, Bush, Obama, you know, go down the line. And look what's going on now. This again, and it's all connected, by the way, Chris. Look what's going on by Obama not going to the Asian conference. They can't pass through now the new trade bills that they're trying to push through. That's going to even have the United States people losing more jobs to cheap labor countries. So they're freaking out on that end as well because they want to open up more so they could sell more. So this whole thing is all connected. So when you're talking about, you know, already the people furloughed, it's having an effect on a lot of different areas and in a lot of different ways.
For generations, investors have been told that U.S. bonds were as safe as money in the bank. Even the mention of a default was considered impossible. However, that's changed markedly. You know, Warren Buffett recently went on record. He likened a default to a nuclear bomb or an exchange of nuclear bombs, saying that it's too unthinkable to even contemplate. What does he know that the rest of us need to know?
I think he's saying everything that everybody's saying, actually. You've already said it. I mean, you've lined up the catastrophe that will happen with a debt default. you know, and you pick up any newspaper, the Financial Times, you know, Tuesday's Financial Times, front page. You know, pick up any of the newspapers in the business field, you know, go to any of the websites. You know, this will be a catastrophe. And listen, if you were, around the country, it kills the reserve currency, too, the United States. That one really unravels very quickly. But again, you know, being a global economic trend forecaster, I'm putting my bets that, number one, if they do default, it won't be a straight-out action of government inaction. There'll be a straw man that makes it look like it had to happen because of a geopolitical or some other kind of wild card issue that will get the people's mind off the ineptness and inability of Congress to deal with this. And even that they're getting away with dealing with this at this level for so long, to me, is an affront to this country, that we have such people that are so inconsiderate about the well-being of the nation.
A top bank noted recently that if the U.S. skips its interest payments on U.S. Treasury bonds, the S&P 500 equities market could lose nearly 50% alone this year. One media source claims that banks are also preparing their ATM machines with extra cash just in case a panic comes to pass. I would suspect they would very quickly run out of cash. Any thoughts?
Well, you know, you mentioned before about Detroit being the canary in the mine shaft regarding bankruptcy. Just take a look at Cyprus. That, to me, was the canary in the mine shaft. That's what you can expect.
That threat of bail-ins, give it whatever moniker you like. You know, I mean, bail-ins, some folks just call it a government confiscation. I mean, we're politely borrowing money from your wallet. But in the final analysis, we're seeing legislators include some really frightening verbiage in virtually every major industrialized nation. And I don't mean to sound alarmist, and it just seems like article after article. For instance, Poland, you may have read, essentially nationalized half of its pension funds. Said, I'm sorry, we're going to take 50% of your pension. Gone, just like that. And it's not just an isolated case. Lots of interesting clauses being written in and essentially putting the taxpayers on the hook for government-related profligacy.
Yes, and again, if there is a geopolitical reason behind it, they'll get away with it. These terrible terrorists have jeopardized the future of the United States, and because of these heinous acts, we are imposing, and it'll go on and on. They'll make up a story. The yellow ribbons will come out, the flags will wave, and 80% of the people will believe it. I want to give you a forecast. Here we are in October of 2013. In October of 1999, it's in the Trends Journal. Anybody could go to our website, trendsjournal.com, go to our forecast page. It's right there. I said that there would be the dot-com meltdown by the second quarter of 2000. It happened in March. Remember, the NASDAQ was at 5,000, and it happened. I am forecasting there's going to be a great financial unraveling by March of 2014.
I wouldn't be surprised if we don't see something just as you've outlined there. You know, Gerald, there's another alarming trend we keep reading about in the United States, and this is something that I think that you would have your finger right on the pulse of, and that is in many states and municipalities, judges are tossing folks, everyday hardworking people, into debtor's prison. This is not just an isolated case. It violates the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment. You know, only 150 years ago, around the 1840s and 50s, debtor's prisons were prevalent here in the United States, very common. And if the government can't balance its checkbook, how can the public be held responsible for its debts?
Well, you make a very good point. And let's expand even beyond that. Let's look at what's going on with this whole college fraud, where you have young people now getting out of school that were coerced into taking debt because they thought that they were going to get this degree and it was going to buy them a job. There's no way they could get out of the debt. They become indentured servants. It's very difficult to get out of the debt. There are other instances, for example, what also has happened I mean, you know, this whole thing is a criminal act to me. I mean, you're 17, 18 years old. What do you know? You don't know anything. I know your kids are special and amazing, but for the rest of the 18 and 19-year-olds like I was or any of the other people, you know, you don't know what you're doing. And again, and all of a sudden, your parents or grandparents are co-signing these loans for you. And now you're out of school and you can't find a job. Where are you going to get a job? Oh, Amazon's hiring 70,000 people for Christmas. Oh, great. That's going to be wonderful. Yeah, that'll pay you nothing. And so what we're looking at when you're talking about debt is prison, there's debt is prison and indentured servitude. And you know who you could thank for this, by the way? This began under the Clinton administration in the later years. I followed this very closely. And you know who was a big pusher behind this? Joe Biden. That's right. When he was senator of that loophole state. Yeah, well, the corporations are down there, you know, so you could get away with murder, literally. So what you're saying about putting people into debtor's prison and making them indentured servants, this is the new America. And, as I said, it's called fascism. It's the merger of state and corporate powers. This is not globalization, by the way. That's the other epiphany I've had. This is multinationalization. It's a multinational takeover. And so what they've done is they've made the laws so that you cannot get out of your debt one way or another. And by making these kids indentured servants, they're going to make sure that they get every penny that they want, plus they will wring out, they will draw blood from a stone. They'll do anything they can to get all they want and all they need because this is what's happened to America. And again, am I exaggerating? Look at the facts, Chris. The gap between the rich and the poor, the wealth gap, is more concentrated now than it has been in the last 100 years. Jimmy Carter this week said that the middle class today look like the poor of the 1970s.
Of course, we don't want to disparage higher education. You and I both are believers in how important that is. But you were right. If we look at debt-related secondary education has become a huge problem in excess of $1 trillion. And unfortunately, it's gone in far beyond even the inflation rate. We've watched this, you might even refer to it as a new bubble, a new financial bubble. So I think the best advice we could give to listeners who have kids or soon will have kids in school or are considering going to school outside of high school, if you will, is try to keep costs and expenses as low as possible and always be looking for internships. Hey, look for an internship at the Trends Research Institute. I mean, it's so important to try to, I think, gear your educational pursuits with a career path.
That's what I'm saying. And, you know, let's look at what's going on over here. You look at the America's K-12. It doesn't even win place or show compared to the rest of the world. The education system in this country is literally worthless unless you know how to navigate through it.
That's right. It's the navigation that's so important. And I really do believe that there are some incredible alternatives to the more traditional system. But I think folks are starting to wake up to those alternatives. So let's hope that people will think twice for putting $30,000 to $50,000 a year.
I mean, who's making this stuff up? I got one for you. Let's do stocking shelves and shipping in and handling. Let's create a college course in that, because that's the only kind of jobs that people are getting these days, because they shipped all our jobs, all our technology, all our brain power to slave labor companies so they can get the highest return on their investment.
But I would want to encourage listeners to try to instill a passion for algebra and math and the sciences in their children and in their family, because this is where we're ailing. This is where we do need the most folks. I mean, I'm a huge fan of economics and business, but that's my background. I understand that's not for everybody. These are the areas that the jobs of the future will, the really fine jobs will be found. Maybe encourage your child to learn Latin. You know, they might become a doctor or a chemist. Is the language of science and medicine. Please don't let a child graduate from high school without at least 1 to 2 typing courses. It's the best gift you'll ever give with them, because otherwise they're going to be paying their roommates and friends to type every paper they're going to have to type up in school and at work. So, you know, these are just a few simple things that I'm astounded that kids can graduate high school without having under their belts. Jared, let me give you the last word here and share any other major themes or trends that you see developing that we haven't covered.
Well, during these times of uncertainty like this, I think it's very important to know where your money is. And if it's a bank holiday, it's not a holiday, man. You're not going to get your dough. And if you have certificates deposit, if they close Wall Street, you won't be able to cash them out.
It'd be a certificate of confiscation, won't it?
Yeah, right. That, by the way, that's what happened on 9/11. You know, Wall Street was closed. You couldn't cash out your CDs. I know, because I tried. And so I think it's a very, very important right now to really know that you can get your hands on your money, because if there's a Cyprus kind of incident over here, guess what? You're not going to have any dough. And then you're also going to see, if that does happen, why it's valuable to have gold and silver in your possession, because you're going to be able to buy a lot with it, and probably more than on the dollar. So those are some things to consider. If you don't have your money, you don't have it. If it's in a bank, if it's in somebody else's hands, it's not in your hands. And in these times of economic uncertainty, when they're talking about, you know, debt ceiling and defaulting and government shutdowns and geopolitical strife, and I'm just saying, you better think twice, know where it is.
I want folks to try to wrap their minds around the thought, my silver coins aren't going to earn interest. If I leave it in a certificate of deposit, I can earn, 1 or 2%. What happens if you earn your 1 or 2%, but you never receive your money? Remember what Rogers used to say? I'm less concerned of the return on my money and much more concerned about the return of my money. And I think we're entering one of those periods of time. They don't come around but every few generations. But when they do, you'd better have something solid. You'd better crystallize everything you've spent a lifetime accumulating, because where we do see, as you mentioned, a Cyprus-like event, and everything that's not nailed down is gone.
That's right. You don't need any more proof than what's already happened. Oh, look what happened with MF Global when they went into segregated accounts.
That's right. Gerald Celente, thanks so much for spending time with us today.
Thank you, Chris.